Hi, folks, and welcome to another episode of West Obsessed, where the writers and editors of High Country News discuss issues critical to the health of the American West. On today's show, we're going to be talking about the idea of homeland and how that question has really come to the fore in a huge debate in southern Utah. I'm Brian Calvert, the managing editor of High Country News, and I'm recording with our collaboration partner KVNF in Paonia, Colorado. I'm joined in the studio today by our publisher and executive director, Paul Larmer. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
And we're also joined via Skype by contributing editor Jonathan Thompson. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, great to be here.
So there's this fascinating story shaping up in southern Utah over a proposal for a national monument called Bear's Ears. The proposal for a national monument, which would involve the federal government and a coalition of tribes, is stirring up a lot of animosity, as many things federal do in the interior West. It raises major questions about federal land management, tribal sovereignty, and Western history, and we're going to get into all of that in a second, but first I just want to sketch out this place. So there's this area, this big swath of land. The proposal would take up about 2 million acres that stretches all the way from Canyonlands National Park south to Bluff and the border of the Navajo Nation, and then west to Glen Canyon National Recreation Area. So this is like this huge piece of beautiful desert country. It includes those sort of red rock needles and towers and those bobble-headed hoodoos, the canyons and gulches and cedar forests, and a lot of land that has these sort of old tribal artifacts on them, like pot shards and stuff. And so at the heart of all of this are these two buttes called Bear's Ears, and those are sacred to several tribes, and they're very beautiful. And then it's also in the midst of several Mormon communities who really are not thrilled to see even more federal oversight come to town. So we've just wrapped up a big story on Bear's Ears, and that was reported by you, Jonathan, edited by you, Paul. So maybe let's just walk through this story. Jonathan, you've spent a lot of time over the years in this country. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's really incredible country. I mean, anybody who's been there knows that, and a lot of people have been there. It's a type of place that people like to visit because there's canyons and, like you said, mesas and mountains within this 2 million acres. Plus, you know, I think probably most importantly to most people who are trying to protect this in one way or another are the archaeological riches. There's I think an estimated 30,000 archaeological sites in San Juan County, and some people, that's like what's been inventoried by the BLM, but other people say that there's up to 100,000 sites if you include rock art and that kind of thing. So there's pueblos, there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was a very big community back in Pueblo and times, which kind of stretched from about 400 AD to about 1200 AD. And this is all out there. It's all on BLM and Forest Service land, and it's being visited more and more. And also, it's been looted. A lot of this stuff has been vandalized, either out of kind of spite or out of people greed, people looking for artifacts, or out of people just picking stuff up as they walk through, or accidentally leaning on a wall or something and knocking it over. So there's this pretty much universal feeling that there is a need to protect it. The question is how, and some people are proposing a national monument.
So we'll get to the sort of that spike question in a second, because I'm sure people are like, what? But we'll kind of talk about that in just a second. So yeah, basically it's a fantastic place. If you've ever been there, it's beautiful. It is sort of big sky, big canyon, massive flaming sunsets and sort of desert vistas, and it's just great, and it's sort of Ed Abbey country. And so, you know, a lot of different people love it for a lot of different reasons, and so some of them have been pushing for President Barack Obama to use what is called the Antiquities Act to designate the area for protection. And Paul, maybe you can just describe a bit about the Antiquities Act and what it means when something is designated as a national monument.
Sure. The Antiquities Act of 1906 has been used by 19 presidents. It was interesting to find out that Nixon, Reagan, and George H.W. never used it, but every other president has. And it basically was first created because all this looting was going on. And it was like, okay, we need to protect the antiquities that are out there. And so Teddy created this law, and Devil's Tower was the first one ever named. a lot of it, over the years, it's been used more and more liberally, I would say. And so it's not just, there's actually language that said you should protect the smallest area possible to protect the resource and manage it well. Well, you know, everything from the Grand Canyon to other giant monuments have been created. They've turned into national parks. And in the modern world, the Antiquities Act has kind of become the alternative to Congress. Congress won't do a damn thing. They won't pass any more wilderness bills. We're working on the ground here to protect this. Let's name a monument instead.
Right. And very famously, there's the story about Teddy Roosevelt and the Grand Canyon and him saying, well, you can't really designate a part of this to keep it as the whole. So it has to be this whole thing. And so the Grand Canyon actually kind of came out of the Antiquities Act. So there's kind of this interesting, yeah, it was this a workaround. I think for a long time, but it, especially now, it's kind of become a workaround. You know, there have been some controversial designations under the Antiquities Act. But when we're talking about a national monument, what does that mean? What does that give a place, a status as national monument?
Well, it all depends on the proclamation that the president actually produces. So it can be different. The Grand Staircase Escalante had a fairly long proclamation that talked about protecting the antiquities in there and the other cultural artifacts within that giant. It was also about 2 million acres. So it depends. There's some very small urban national monuments now. There's very much for historical reasons that they've been created. So it all depends on the proclamation. But generally, it protects. It gives more protection to an area rather than less. If there's a threat of a coal mine or something, that might be removed, like it was in the Escalante. There might even be some sort of roadless protection within that as well. So it generally confers more protection, not less. It does sometimes cause the agencies to go through a whole nother management process to figure out what the management should be that's different than how the BLM, for instance, managed that land before.
Uh-huh. Okay, yeah. So it depends on the proclamation. It depends on what the president says it ought to be designated for under the Antiquities Act. And then it's sort of up to these federal agencies to protect it under that mandate.
Correct.
So protection equals good, right, Jonathan? So what's all the hubbub?
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody kind of agrees that protection equals good. There's pretty vast differences. There's a vast range of how people think that protection should happen. So,
Who are the people involved in these different sides of this sort of debate? Let's kind of sketch that out maybe.
Yeah. And this particular debate is more complicated than most in as far as that goes, because there is a whole range of people. So on one side, you've got your tribal coalition, which is 5 different tribes backed up by another 2 dozen tribes who are pushing for the national monument designation.
The main tribes are?
The main tribes are the Hopi, the Zuni, the Navajo Nation, the Ute Mountain Utes, and the Ouray and Uinta Utes, or the Ute tribe, who are up in kind of northern Utah. The Ute Mountain Utes and the Navajos both have land within San Juan County, right next to the proposed monument. The Hopi and Zuni do not. They're down in Arizona and New Mexico, but this is their ancestral homeland. Those guys are all on one side. On the other side, you've kind of got the locals, the old time locals, the pioneers. They're descendants of pioneers who are pushing against this national monument and have long been pushing against kind of any kind of upping of regulations or protection of this land. And then sort of in the middle, you've got some other people there. So on the one hand, you've got some Utes and Navajos who are local, who are against the monument, but do want some kind of protection. And then you've also got people who are the pioneer stock. You've got descendants of pioneers there who really, really want more protection. But they aren't necessarily, some of them are for a monument, but some of them are not for a monument because they worry about backlash if you have this kind of presidential top-down proclamation.
Right. So, yeah, this is one of those stories. What I love about it is it's this sort of this legacy of manifest destiny. You've got sort of Mormon settlers and a sort of a really strong attachment to the land on that side of things. You've got at least five tribes with ancestral sort of claim to these areas, and it's a sort of a homeland in that sense to them. And so in the middle of all that, you get these sort of echoes of history that come out, and then you've got what sort of turns into something that's more about home, but then it's about we don't want the feds in here, which is a very, very common sentiment in this part of the country. Paul, maybe you could talk a little bit about how this is what we call sagebrush rebel country.
Yeah, and Jonathan lays it out very nicely in the story. But yeah, San Juan County has long been a hotbed of anti-federal sentiment. The federal government has gone in there a couple times to raid the communities there for pot hunting and busted them. There was even a tragic suicide of a local after he got caught. So there's this kind of feeling like the jackbooted thugs are out there. And also there's just kind of this bunker mentality that these very rural Mormon areas in Utah have. Like, hey, we carved out a living here. This is our land as much as anybody's. And, you know, those tribes who are on the reservations far away, yeah, they may have some claim to it, but basically this is our land. We settled it. And so they have a fierce independence. And Jonathan, you might talk briefly about the Recapture Canyon event you went to right following the Bundy fiasco in Nevada.
Yeah, I mean, this was sort of a protest against federal overreach, and they used Recapture Canyon, which is actually a canyon that's right next to Blanding, which is kind of the San Juan County hotspot for the sagebrush rebels, if you will. It's where all the pioneers moved. They originally settled Bluff, but then they moved up to Blanding because Bluff was, there was too many floods and stuff. So they moved up to Blanding, and that's kind of still the hot spot. Recapture Canyon is a little canyon that goes right next to Blanding, and it is BLM land, and it's filled with cliff dwellings and that sort of thing. And it was closed to motorized vehicles by the BLM, I think in 2007, I believe. And that was just another one of those things that really fired up the locals. They were really upset about it.
Yeah, that's
interesting. So they've been protesting for a long time. And in 2014, Phil Lyman, the local San Juan County commissioner, led this motorized protest down there, not just to protest the closure of that canyon, but also to protest just federal overreach in general, what he calls federal overreach.
Yeah, there's a part of this I want to sort of circle back to for a second, because it's this idea of artifact hunting that is a part of this story, I think. And I remember as a kid, one of our pastimes was rock knocking. Literally you just go walk onto the mesa and or any place and just look for pretty rocks and also hopefully like an arrowhead or something like that. And so as we sort of started thinking about this story and we've been watching it kind of coming for a while and wondering whether or not there's going to be this designation and trying to understand why it would be so controversial, there's this sort of this idea that there's an old pastime, I guess you'd call it, of people going out and looking for artifacts and sort of digging them up and rumbling through things. And that sort of seems like kind of an innocent activity. But then when you start to think about the loss of the sort of archaeological heritage and the fact that some of these sites are, I guess, graves. Is that right, Jonathan?
I mean, there's a whole range. You know, these were communities basically here. So you've got everything from the houses to the, you know, what you would call the churches, to the midden, which is the trash, which is also valuable. And then you've got also graves. And graves are certainly something, a target for pot hunters, because oftentimes there's pots or other jewelry or that sort of thing inside the graves.
So there's a real need to protect some of sort of the archaeological treasures there. And how about just in general the conservation of the land? Does it get trashed otherwise, or is this the main question?
No, it gets trashed otherwise. I mean, there you've got a big problem with ATVs. You know, there's an incredible amount of roads in San Juan County, Utah. already, or ATV trails that are designated and out there. But regardless of that fact, you will go out there and you will see, you know, you'll be walking along like a trail or an ATV road, and then you'll step off of it for a while and walk a, kind of a, through the forest, and you'll see ATV tracks just random out there because people just, I mean, no matter how many designated roads there are, people tend to want to go off-road, I guess. And so they do. And so that's a huge problem for sure. The other problem, I think, is just overuse, even by people who are otherwise very respectful. But, you know, you get somebody was telling me that last Memorial Day weekend, they counted 69 dispersed campsites on Comb Ridge down near Bluff. So in a pretty small area where camping is just kind of a free-for-all, which a lot of us like, but, you know, you got 69 people and there's no toilet facilities or that sort of thing. So that can have a lot of impact, as you can imagine.
Yeah, that's right. So that sort of brings up an interesting question because the counter argument to this proposed designation for a national monument is that you're not going to be able to regulate what goes on there any better now than they do. And, but Paul, do you think that's true?
I think it'll be a challenge, but I think having a monument designation and having the tribes involved could involve some closure of some areas and maybe some more resources. When you get a national monument, you tend to get a little bit more money. So it can help the on-the-ground management that's, you know, very dispersed right now with just a few BLM rangers out there probably. So you might get a little help on that front. It's not a guarantee. Congress is pretty tight purged. But so, yeah, it can improve that way. I mean, I thought I would just throw in one other idea here, and that is that the conservationists, the environmental movement, has long sought protection for these lands as well. And they're involved sort of in the background with the tribes, and they very much are sort of like proponents of this monument. They've also been pushing for wilderness designation there for the last 25 years and, you know, going against a Utah delegation that's very much opposed to wilderness. So they're kind of an interesting player that's there, the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. And so this would be a step toward them protecting some of the lands they've cared about for a long time, too.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. So that's a really good point where you sort of have a tribal coalition leading the way. And sort of, Jonathan, what exactly are they leading the way on? They've sort of made a proposal to the president. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So they've come up with an entire a plan that's sort of like a master plan for this thing. It's not in any way a management plan, but it's saying we want this monument. This is the boundaries we want, and this is how we want it managed. And that's kind of the really unique thing, which is that it would be there would be a manager for the monument, as is the case in most monuments, but that manager would be overseen by a management committee of 8 people. And those 8 people would consist of 3 representatives from each of the relevant federal agencies, the National Park Service, BLM, and the Forest Service, and 1 representative from each of those 5 tribes.
So the tribes would outnumber the feds.
Correct. They would outnumber the feds, and presumably they would be, that committee would be the one who comes up with the management plan. You know, assuming the president's proclamation says that's what's going to happen. So that would be totally different than anything out there right now.
Right. That's a huge experiment.
Very big experiment. And, you know, potential to get messy, you know, there for sure, because you've got tribes like the Navajo and the Hopi involved who historically have not always been best friends. And not only just way back, but in recent times, right now, parts of the Navajo Nation are pushing for, you know, small parts of the government, but parts nevertheless are pushing for a Grand Canyon Escalade, you know, the tram, the resort along the Grand Canyon on Navajo land that is also very sacred to the Hopi. That area right there is super sacred to the Hopi, even though it's not on Hopi land. And so you've got a conflict right there on the same sort of issue going on between those 2 tribes. And so it could get very interesting. But But, you know, it's an experiment, and I think, you know, I think it's going to be interesting for sure. If it happens.
Yeah, I think if you're just tuning in, you're listening to West Obsessed. We're discussing the proposed Bears Ears National Monument in southern Utah. I'm Brian Calvert, the managing editor for High Country News. I'm here with publisher Paul Larmer and contributing editor Jonathan Thompson. And I want to circle back a little bit to that spite thing. So people get out there and they do what out of spite and why?
Well, okay, so when we talk about pot hunting and we talk about looting and that sort of thing, you know, there's a whole sort of range of what people do. And, you know, I'm going to come out here and do a little confession. When I was a little kid, we would go to these sites and we would pick up pot shirts and we would take them home. And it was about probably when I was like 6 or 7 that my parents somehow realized that that was a bad thing. And we stopped doing it. You know, it was like, whoa, that's a bad thing because it removes the archaeological record and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. These communities here that we're talking about, they've all grown up doing the same thing. So it's kind of hard for them to go back, but it's not out of spite. You know, they're doing it just because it's neat, you know, it's neat stuff and they want to take it home. It's understandable, mm-hmm. even if it's not great. But then there are the people who are actual pot hunters who are going and digging and they're vandalizing things. They're digging up graves and that sort of thing. And that's obviously, you know, another level, much more destructive. They're doing it to sell these things or to collect them or whatever. But they're also doing it in more recent times, especially after the 1986 pot hunting raid that Paul was talking about. They're doing it as sort of a protest. You know, some of them are. They're saying, for them, the idea of archaeological sites and the idea of archaeological preservation, environmental preservation, and federal overreach sort of get all tangled together. Yeah. So when they feel like the feds are coming down on them too hard for whatever reason, they feel somewhat justified, I think, you know, and I don't have a lot of evidence to back this up, but they feel justified to go out and take their resentment or their frustrations out on the archaeology by looting, you know, and maybe they would have looted anyway. Maybe they would have dug up a site anyway, but this gives them something. It gives them a little bit more justification so that it may be the last thing that pushes them to actually do it.
Right.
And the reason we think that happens is because every time there's something like Recapture Canyon getting closed or the 2009 raid or whatever, that kind of thing that happens, you see an uptick in vandalism at these sites.
Right, so it's just kind of a big middle finger to the whole idea of the federal government coming in and trying to protect all this stuff where my ancestors came in here, and I think that's like a really interesting point. It's sort of carved out a living out of this place, and my family's always done this. Well, that's sort of a different thing, but on the other hand, yes, I kind of feel like that is an attitude that is sort of prevalent in that part of Utah. And it is sort of muddying these waters. But Paul, do you think that there is a good case for the side of things that say it doesn't need a national monument designation? We can find ways to protect it. We are stewards of the land who live here anyway. We know best about how to manage this land. And what's that argument? And does it have a lot of merit?
I think there is some merit to it. I mean, you could have seen different designations for both the Escalante Grand Staircase and also for this area. What's interesting in Jonathan's story, too, is that there's this parallel process going on, the Public Lands Initiative, where the Utah delegation is making an attempt county by county to figure out what should be wilderness and what should not be wilderness and open to multiple use. And this monument throws a little wrinkle in that. They were unable to come up with a bill that was viable. Some people say they intentionally created a bill that was going to open up too much development so that they could point fingers at the federal government yet again, which is like red meat for their constituencies and getting reelected. But it's interesting that the committee does not include a state representative or a county representative on the committee. Of course, that I asked an Obama official about that recently, and he said, well, you wouldn't ever do that because that would be totally precedent setting. actually a partnership with, you know, the tribes, which are, you know, independent nations in some sense, and also have that deep cultural knowledge, it makes sense to partner with them, not with the local county officials. So that's their stand on it. I was going to just say one other thing about these monuments. Normally, in recent years, Obama has really gone to places and said, oh, you locals have already worked out a solution. Let me just put a monument stamp on it. This is a little different because there's so much disagreement. And so was Escalante, where they first got burned. The Clinton administration was like, they went ahead and announced that without consulting hardly with anybody. So this would be, they sent Jewell out there to do a hearing, and supposedly they've done their due diligence on the ground, but it would still be in opposition to some of the local sentiment.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Jonathan, we had you out there reporting a bunch, and Secretary of Interior Sally Jewell was out there. Kind of what did that look like? What was the sort of what did she run into when she went to sort of have this kind of a public hearing about this monument proposal?
Well, it's pretty interesting, actually. You know, I was worried going down there that there would be this Sagebrush Rebellion kind of Bundy reaction, a bunch of don't tread on me flags and that sort of thing. And there really wasn't. And whether that was something that the opposition planned because they wanted to make a good impression, or that kind of attitude just wasn't there, I don't know. But it was very focused on the monument. And almost all the people who were opposed to the monument spoke in favor of the Public Lands Initiative, this congressional bill that would go county by county and try to protect it in other ways. And so I found that pretty interesting. But it was also, at the same time, it was also very, it was pretty intense, and there was a little bit of hostility. There was some booing and stuff in the hearing, and outside the hearing, the anti-monument people were kind of confronting the pro-monument people, which it was easy to do because everybody wore color-coded t-shirts for which side they were on. And so they were kind of confronting these people and saying, you know, you came in here from out of town, out of state, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing coming in here telling us what to do? And would lay out their argument against the monument. But otherwise, you know, it's actually a fairly peaceful thing. Secretary Jewell listened quietly for 3 hours, I think, or 4 hours. I mean, it was a long time, in very hot temperatures. It wasn't easy. And she really didn't say much. You know, she just said, I'm here to listen. And, you know, so she didn't give us any cues about whether we should expect this to be designated or not.
Right.
We have no idea.
That's the thing. So this is just an idea right now. A lot of people are pushing for it. And I think it is really interesting to note that it doesn't clearly divide Mormons versus tribes. We kind of talked about that at the top, but the fact that people kind of needed t-shirts to tell each other apart, I think, is very interesting. There's a lot happening in this story. There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot at stake. It's a unique situation, as we've talked about. Paul, I just thought maybe you would take a minute here to talk about what this means in the big picture, that sort of environmental groups are partnering up with tribes, and that these kinds of new initiatives are coming out. What does that mean, and where is that heading?
Well, I think it's interesting because we have the North Dakota pipeline protests going on right now. We've had a lot of other initiatives to protect natural resources in the West where tribes have been very involved. If you've ever read Charles Wilkinson's book, you can see that there's been a steady progression of tribes taking more control over their natural resources and partnering with federal agencies. And so this continues that trend in a big way. And I think it's really, like I said earlier, that the fact that the conservationists are taking the back seat here is quite fascinating, because normally they've taken the front seat on almost every other one, except perhaps the Rio Grande del Norte, which happened recently, which is really the Taos Pueblo and the Hispanic land grantees and the conservationists coming together. So we're seeing these coalitions build, I think, in new ways. And it's not just straight, let's protect the environment and the water and the air. That's all part of it, for sure. But it's also, let's protect culture, and it's sort of a measure of social justice is involved. So I think that's a new framework that's happened underneath the Obama administration, and probably will continue, of course. So
right. Yeah, and that's something I think we're keeping an eye on as a magazine, this idea that there's a mix of sort of social justice and environmental issues kind of starting to stir around, and we are seeing it across the West. Is there anything that we should be watching for next, Jonathan? What's the next thing that's going to happen with Bears Ears itself?
Well, the next thing that's going to happen is either it's going to be designated as a monument or not. And that should happen very soon after the election, because I think that they'll need a certain amount of time, you know, to put in the Federal Register before Obama gets out of office. So I'm guessing, everybody's guessing that he's going to wait till after the election so he doesn't mess up the election, I guess. So that's, yeah, I think that's really the next big thing. I guess the other stuff that we'll be looking at really is ways in which the people who are opposed to it are trying preemptive measures to kind of mess it up. San Juan County commissioners are talking about allocating funds from their budget to mount a legal challenge if it is designated. The state of Utah just sold off some parcels that they own that are within the proposed monument that would have been swapped out had the designation gone through. Part of it would have been to swap those for oil and gas land somewhere else outside the monument. So that is seen by some as perhaps kind of a preemptive measure. We're not sure why they did that, but you would be looking for those types of things, but mostly looking right after the election to see what Obama does or does not do.
Definitely a big story to watch in coming weeks. It's a complicated story in a very beautiful place, which is kind of the story of the West. I think that's all we have time for today. If you want to learn more about Bears Ears and other public lands issues, you can visit our website at hcn.org. If you'd like to comment on this broadcast, you can keep the conversation going at kvnf.org. You've been listening to West Obsessed. Thanks again to our contributing editor, Jonathan Thompson.
Thank you.
And our executive director and publisher, Paul Larmer.
Glad to be here.
I'm Brian Calvert, the managing editor of High Country News. And as always, thanks for listening.